For a limited time at McDonald's, get a Big Mac Extra Value Meal for $8. That means two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun, and medium fries, and a drink. We may need to change that jingle.
Prices and participation may vary.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Ohtani, he flips the bat and watches it fly.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Chapman leaves the bases loaded.
How did they not score?
Today's guest, Pro Football Hall of Famer Kurt Warner. Bears wide receiver Romo Dunze. Dancing with the Stars host Alfonso Ribeiro. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, that's true, and I can confirm it by my presence. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, live on Disney Plus, the ESPN app everywhere, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Romo Dunze, one of the young hot receivers in the National Football League, fresh off of the Bears improving to 2-2, is going to join us in the middle of this program. Kurt Warner's first up on his usual Warner Wednesday spot. Alfonso Ribeiro, everybody. The delightful Alfonso Ribeiro of everything, I guess, that Jimmy Kimmel doesn't do for anything on Disney or ABC, is on this program, Dancing with the Stars, America's funniest home videos, all of that good stuff.
You saw him at the American Century this summer,
right? I did, indeed. He's one of the 87 other players I went looking up at and saying hello.
Poor Dylan Dreyer.
Catherine Tappan is the only one that I can look Tappan. To the side and say, what's up, T88? At any rate, they were delightful to play with, all of them. I didn't get a chance to play with Alfonso, but we'll have fun with him when he joins us in the program. Good to see you over there, Christopher. How are you,
hey,
sir?
Hey, Rich, I'm great. What's up, man?
DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts. Good to see you.
Just so you know, my analytics says I've pushed enough faders, I should be taken out of the game.
Good to know.
Whoa, wow. Whoa.
What's up, TJ Jefferson? How are you, sir? Good to see you.
I, too, would like to say hello to Dylan Dreyer.
Okay,
and
nice.
I have a random question. You know, it's always random with
you. Yeah.
Did you have a show name picked out if it wasn't the Rich Eisen Show? Was there ever anything else that you were going to call a show?
No.
I don't know why.
I don't know if you're aware, it's born out of a podcast called the Rich Eisen
Podcast. Yeah, I don't know.
Podcast.
It just popped into my head. So, I don't know why.
Okay. Great.
I didn't know if you had a funky name picked. Or...
No funky names.
The two bald guys.
you know what I mean?
Very good. Let's start this program with a general question that we see in across sports. Is when do you pull your starter? And interesting. It's a tale of two such stories right now. Because one has done so when everybody thought maybe it's time to do so. And we'll see how it works out. And another one who did it, when I can safely attest, everybody who roots for that team says, do not take your starter out. One is football, the other is baseball. A tale of two starters being pulled. One in Cleveland, Ohio, where unfortunately for Guardians fans, A.J. Hinch decided to say to Tyreek Skubal, just keep pitching.
You stay out there.
You know, because again, it's the wild card round, and it's three straight games in a row. And if you don't advance, your season's over. And if you do advance, your game one starter isn't most likely, depending on the way things play out for the divisional round, isn't going to be your game one starter for that round due to the 5 days of rest. So you might as well just push the pedal to the metal, which A.J. Hinch decided to do, yada, yada, yada. Tarek Skubal has a victory in Cleveland that stands up. And as you know, a lot of Cleveland sports fans have been pouring their heart and soul and hopes into the Guardians for their remarkable run to the playoffs to not even make it, but host the wild card round as American League Central champs. And the reason why they're doing that is because of a great story, great team to root for, and also there's the Browns. And the Cavs season hasn't started yet. And they know how the Cavs season, despite it being so remarkable in the regular season last year, there was a drain and it circled it pretty fast. So The Browns have a head coach in Kevin Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, who has decided to pull his starter. His name is Joe Flacco. And Flacco, once upon a time, was the comeback player of the year from his couch to the Cleveland Browns in the Stefanski system, and everything there lit up like a Christmas tree with Deshaun Watson being out for the rest of the season, and the Browns made the playoffs with Joe Flacco as their starter. And it was amazing. There are a number of people who won their fantasy leagues because they decided to take a flyer on Flacco when he first started for the Browns and did well in his first start, and he was unreal. And so when the Browns brought him back for 1 year, $4 million, and then decided to draft not one but two rookies to join Kenny Pickett, who was there, who they acquired from the Philadelphia Eagles almost within a month after he took the victory formation to start a parade in Philadelphia. It's like, okay, it's only a matter of time, one would think, unless Flacco lights it up, that they'll start Pickett or one of the rookies. And as it turned out, Pickett got hurt in training camp. He wound up being traded to the Raiders, where there's so many interceptions being thrown by Geno Smith. There's some conversation in the desert right now about whether maybe Pickett should start there, because there's only one person who's turned it over more in the first 4 weeks of this season than Geno Smith. And his name is Joe Flacco. So, sure enough, as soon as we left the studio here yesterday, getting set to watch all the playoff baseball games on ESPN and the family of networks, Stefanski made a move. And it's Dylan Gabriel starting at quarterback. And we'll see how this one works out, as Dylan Gabriel is now going to be the first quarterback in NFL history to make his first career start in an international game. Yes, he will play in the home of Tottenham before he plays in the home of the Browns or anyone else's home in the NFL. And he's taking on a Vikings team that is only traveling to London from Ireland. And Gabriel knows all about traveling. Central Florida, Oklahoma, Oregon. 6 years in college, so he's gotten some reps. Responsible for the most starts and touchdowns in the history of college football quarterbacking. 63 starts. He basically turns to Bo Nix and Brock Purdy says, hold my beer. And 189 touchdowns. And in terms of passing touchdowns, he's tied with somebody who's, I think, see being brought in as a backup in commercials these days, Case Keenum. 155 passing touchdowns there. So he's gotten some experience. And Stefanski, let it be known, some first-team reps during the first month of the season as well. So there's been some writing on the wall internally. This was Kevin Stefanski about making the move.
From the second he's been here, he's been working very hard, very intelligent young man. He's done a nice job throughout practice. And, you know, he's been... This whole season, he's been learning how to get yourself ready and understand the rhythm of an NFL week and what that looks like as a backup. And obviously now feel like he's ready to go in as a starter.
Why now?
Yeah, just my decision where I felt this decision was best for the football team.
Did Joe slide into the number two role?
Yes.
Why did you decide to make Joe the backup and not Shador?
Yeah, Joe's the backup.
And again, that's a question that's not being asked of any coach who's drafted somebody in the fifth round of a draft. Why is Shador not backing up? And we'll have more time to talk about Shador. This is more about what Dylan Gabriel is going to do in the moment, to be honest with you. I know everyone's going to make it about Shador. I know pretty much any other show that's being broadcast and distributed by Disney or ESPN is going to make it about Shador. But this is Dylan Gabriel's gig right now. And it makes sense. Go be Jackson Dart, kid. Because Dart's the only one from that draft class that's won a game so far. Cam Ward is yet to. Maybe Dylan Gabriel could be the second. Taking on a Vikings team that will no doubt look at this, what I people would call Tua Jr., right, as potentially fresh meat. We will see what he can do. Quinshon Judkins can help. His rushing attack has come alive. But guess what, Browns fans? You now have a 41st different starting quarterback since reconstituting in 1999. That is way, way deep in first place. The second place team in terms of most starting quarterbacks since 1999 are your Chicago Bears with 30.
Wow. 30? They have an 11 QB lead?
That is correct. And who knows, maybe by the end of the year, if Shador gets his shot, a dozen. Dang. And this is all about the Browns picking in their way through this year with multiple draft choices next year. And I know nobody in that locker room and certainly in that town wants to already talk about 2026, but is Gabriel going to be the guy? We'll see. If not, do they finally give Shador a shot? We'll see. But it doesn't surprise me that after a 1-3 start with the way everything's looked on offense and the fact that Flacco threw another couple of interceptions last week, that he makes a move like this. Because he reads the room and he has a gut and feel and he makes a move. Dylan Gabriel, we just mentioned over the first few minutes of this program, is the football portion of the conversation over the last 24 hours of somebody deciding to pull his starter, his starting thrower, pitcher, if you will, in football. Dylan Gabriel, the guy who comes in, is left-handed, like the guy who Aaron Boone took out last night after 6 1/3 shutout innings. And Max Fried on the mound with a 1-0 lead on Garrett Crochet in the Red Sox, their left-hander. Cy Young Award candidate, just like Max Fried. 19 wins for Max Fried in his first season as a Yankee, and it was crucial that he would make all those starts and perform as well as he performed with an ERA less than 3, because Garrett Cole, as we all know, blew out his arm needing Tommy John surgery before anything happened this year. And so Fried in his first start in Yankee Stadium, coming up with strikeouts, cruising through the first three, and then escaping some jams, some of his own making in the next three innings. Got a double play ground ball to get out of the sixth, and Jaron Duren coming up in the seventh inning, left-hander, keep him in, and he gets him out. And out comes Aaron Boone to take out his starting pitcher after 102 pitches. And at that point in time, you know what lit up like a Christmas tree? My phone. Cooper, my 14-year-old diehard Yankee fan son, who sits next to me watching Michael Kay in the YES Network for 6 straight months. My buddy Paul, name anybody else in my life who's a Yankee fan, is texting me. One particular man whose enthusiasm can be curbed every now and then.
Oh.
Texting. What is Boone doing? What's he doing bringing in Luke Weaver in this game? And, you know, sure enough, Luke Weaver last year took over the role of closer from eventual New York Met, Shmay Shmoms, as he's referred to in our house, because Cooper and I could not bear to say the name Clay Holmes after a while last year. Weaver was great in last year's playoffs. Maybe there's some gut and there's some feel here. Well, a walk, double, base hit later, there goes the lead. Just like that. And underneath, if you look at the box score of last night's game, you could see the ERA, because they start from scratch in the playoffs. The ERA of Max Fried is 0.00. And then right underneath are the letters INF, which stands for usually infielder.
Not with.
It usually stands for infielder in baseball, but in this particular point, it stands for infinity and beyond. We are on Disney Plus, I guess I should say, and beyond. Infinity.
And beyond.
Now, interestingly enough, you look at Garrett Crochet's total pitches. He stayed in the game. You know, Alex Cora says, you know what? I'm riding my horse. He pitches 117 total pitches. Max Fried at 102. And you had to know, Aaron Boone had to know. He's been through enough of these rodeos He's been through enough of these postseason rodeos. He's been through enough of these postseason rodeos against the Red Sox.
Yep.
To know that at that very moment, at that moment, when a second Boston Red Sox crossed home plate, as Luke Weaver now comes out of the game, he had to know it would be on like the proverbial Donkey Kong after the game as to why did you do it? Why'd you do it? Because right now, as a Yankee fan, I'm sitting here thinking, well, at least Max Fried is rested for his first start of 2026, right? Honestly. But I'm not a manager. I don't have that keen eye to know when somebody's flagging. This is what Boone had to say.
Yeah, just they pressured him pretty good in the fourth, fifth, sixth. You know, had a couple base runners each inning. So I felt like he kind of cruised through the first few, and obviously he ends up pitching great, but I felt like he had to work pretty hard, and I was going to have the six be at the end, but once we got the double, we finished with the double play, I wanted him to go out and get Duran, and then felt like we were lined up.
I don't know what lined up means other than the fact of, I guess, lined up Weaver and then, you know, Devin Williams and then Bednar for the close. I guess that's what he meant by lined up. The thing, I just don't get it. I don't understand it. It's an easy second guess. It's a simple second guess. And all you have to know is I'm sure you, Chris, were being kind to not hit me up. Same thing with everybody on Susie's side of the family. You had to be doing cartwheels when you saw Aaron Boone coming out of the dugout to take Max Fried out with 102 pitches. Knowing, again, by the way, am I correct in that assumption?
I can't do a cartwheel, but
Can you confirm figurative cartwheels, mental cartwheels?
I was very excited.
Got it. You can confirm it. Yeah, great. Because, again, Max Fried isn't going to, if you advance, start game one of the American League Division Series because that's Saturday. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Tarik Skubal, if the Tigers advance, would start game two at the earliest. And he stayed in. If you guys advance, Crochet will start game two, and you'll deal with that later.
Got to get to game two.
You have to get to game two of the American League Division Series, and in order to do that, the history of these three gamers now is the way that the league has set it up, the way that Major League Baseball has set it up. No team that's lost the first game has won the next two to advance. So the Yankees are going to have to set a new standard. Again, there's not a lot of history in it. And they do have Rodon to go tonight.
It's been great all year.
And I'm just wondering, can we get more than 102 pitches out of him if it happens? Again, it's an easy second guess. Simple one. And he had to know. Certainly when Crochet goes 117 pitches into the eighth and hands things off to Aroldis Chapman for a four-out save. And Chapman showed up in the ninth inning of that four-out save looking exactly like the Chapman that a lot of us from Yankee fandom saw as he loads the bases only to get out of it.
Yeah.
With two strikeouts around a pop fly to right field that the Yankees weren't running on. And that's the unkindest cut. It's also a just like, let the Yankee fans see in a nice light at the end of the tunnel to flip this entire script, and we're not talking about what Aaron Boone did with Fried. Instead, we're talking about Giancarlo Stanton with a walk-off base hit or anybody else, and it didn't happen, and now the Yankees are in trouble.
Carlos Rodon, season-high pitches this year, 109.
Okay.
Ooh. He did it twice.
I'd like to go longer. I'd like to see longer than that if he is succeeding. Because right now, I'm sure Max Fried is like, okay, this will be great. I guess I'll be fully well-rested for the first week in April, last week in March. That's the beauty of baseball. We're back at it today. And the same thing goes for the Guardians. Yep. Same thing goes for the Padres. Same thing goes for the Reds, who lost their respective games to the Tigers, Cubs, and Dodgers. So, know when to pull your starter. Stefanski's done it. We'll see what happens. Boone did it. We saw what happened. We'll see what happens from there. That's the way we start our first segment of this three-hour program. Kurt Warner will join us next. right here on the Rich Eisen Show to talk about what he expects from Dylan Gabriel, what he saw from Jackson Dart, and more.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. Back on the Rich Eisen Show, simulcast, everybody. We're on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. And as usual, Wednesday spot, ladies and gentlemen, Kurt Warner. Good to see you, Kurt. How are you?
Kurt, let's go.
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
What's your opinion of the move that Kevin Stefanski made, sir? What do you think about Flacco out, Dylan Gabriel in? What do you think?
I think most of us felt like it was just a matter of time, you know, that the future of their franchise wasn't Joe Flacco, even though he was the best quarterback. Obviously coming in, and I think he's played well at times. I don't think he played very well on Sunday, you know, with the record where it is. And, you know, I think I've heard a few people talk about it. You know, they've got some draft stock in the first round next year where they could get a quarterback if one of those guys is the right guy. I'm not sure watching college football who that right guy is, you know, to pick high in the draft quite yet. But if they want to do that, they got to figure out these two guys that they drafted this year, if one of them can be their guy or can be their guy for a while until they, you know, find that right guy that they think can take over. And so, again, if they started out hot, Joe would have obviously kept the seat. With some of the struggles that they've had with where their record is, I don't think this surprises anybody that, you know, Dylan's going to get his shot. If he plays well, I think he'll obviously hold on to the seat. If he doesn't play well, I would not be surprised if Shadur at some point gets an opportunity as well, just to say, hey, let's, you know, empty this thing and let's see who is our best guy. And if one of these guys can be a franchise quarterback, or if we've got to make another move.
What'd you see from Jackson Dart on film as Dart became the first quarterback from the rookie class to win a game in the NFL? He's 1-for-1 now, and against the Chargers defense, that's no joke, as you know, Kurt. What'd you make of Jackson Dart's first appearance?
Yeah, I mean, if you just break down the X's and O's, it wasn't a great performance. You know, made some throws, missed some throws, missed some things. But I think you could feel the spark that he gave this team. And, you know, you never can really quite put your finger on, okay, what was that? You know, the first drive, they take the ball all the way down, they score, he runs it in, he makes a couple big runs in there, and I think those big runs energized people. You know, why their defense play so much better this week than they have. You know, I mean, those are things that you can't explain other than they're fired up to have him for whatever reason, whatever he brings to the table. And you could feel that, you know, even just me watching the all 22, I felt like it was a different team out there. And like I said, it wasn't great, you know, just from, you know, quarterback play, but he gave him a couple big plays in the game, a couple big runs, you know, some things to excite the fans. And so I think it was obviously a great, you know, first outing that you don't play great, but you energize your team and you get a win against a 3-0 team. That's exactly how you want to start, and there's a lot of room for improvement.
Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show. As you know, we're always looking for corners to be turned, sir. Have the Chiefs turned it? Have the Chiefs turned the corner, Kurt Warner?
You know what? I want to say yes, and solely because of the fact of how they played this game. You know, we covered the first game in Brazil, and I talked about it a lot. Like, it didn't look like the same Chiefs team, just from the standpoint is they weren't running RPOs. They weren't throwing a lot of their quick throws, you know, and supplementing their run game with that kind of play. And that had really been their MO for the last couple years, is they couldn't push the ball down the field. So It was a lot of quick throws. That was their run game, yards after catch. And we just didn't see that early. And maybe it was because, you know, as we talked to Andy Reid, there was a big package for Xavier Worthy, and he goes out in the third play. And so maybe they didn't have anybody that they could plug in and run those plays. But when I popped on the tape this past week, it looked like the Chiefs to me. You know, there was a lot more RPOs and those quick throws to supplement that run game and to use Patrick's ability to get defense out of position and then just make those quick throws. A lot more wide receiver screens. And then they got some big plays down the field. But that to me is the Chiefs offense. And I finally saw it again. And so maybe it is because Xavier Worthy is back. We know Rashee Rice is a couple weeks away and he adds that piece as well. And so I feel really good about where they are after that performance against the Baltimore Ravens. And I know a lot of people expected the Ravens to win that game just because of better roster across the board, but they dominated that football game and they were doing what I expected the Chiefs to do all year long. So I do believe they have turned the corner and gotten back to, you know, maybe not a perfect formula, but the formula that was a winning formula for them a year ago.
And then the corner in Houston, has C.J. Stroud and that offense turned it? 26-0 win over the Titans, in which Stroud was 22-for-28 with a passer rating just a little north of 125. Have the Texans and Stroud turned a corner?
Kirk? No, I'm going to say no. You know, I was watching that film and I kept asking myself, they won 26-0, right? Like, where's this offense? You know, where is it at? You know, like I thought it would be more explosive than it was. And so, yeah, the numbers were good. I still think they have issues there. I'm still trying to put my finger on, you know, what's going on with CJ. And again, the numbers were good. And sometimes you have those performances, but I can't shake the first 3 weeks of the season out of my head quite yet. Is there was a lot of struggles. CJ just doesn't look like the same player that he was as a rookie, just awareness, seeing things, getting the ball out of his hands. So I'm not ready to say that they've turned a corner quite yet. I think they played a Titans team that really struggles offensively, and that's why it looked like it did. I'm going to need to see some of that against a better football team.
Okay, so have the Falcons turned a corner offensively? have we found something with Penix that they were able to uncork on Washington, Kurt?
Yeah, here's another one that I'm not quite sure. I'm starting to wonder because I thought they looked really good in week one of the season. And I thought, man, Michael Penix looks really good. And, you know, this team could be, you know, something to reckon with because of all their weapons. And then we go 2 weeks where he doesn't look very good. And then he comes back and he looks really good again this fourth week. And, you know, so for me, consistency is the name of the game at the quarterback position. And that means seeing it. That means being able to work through things when your first read's not open and being able to find the next guy. That's how you have to play the position. There are going to be some games where the number one read is open quite a bit, and you just have to drop back and throw it. And most of these guys that are starting in the NFL can drop back and throw it. And so so I can't just take one game where things just kind of worked out pretty favorably for them and say, okay, they've turned the corner. I think they've got a very simple offense. They run a lot of these choice routes and things every single week, a lot of the same concepts over and over again. And when those things are open, team looks pretty good. When those things aren't open, they don't look very good. And so I have to see some more evolution here. And I've got to see Michael work through some things beyond just his first read and those guys getting open before I'm ready to say that this offense has turned the corner. They've got lots of talent, and we see what they're capable of. We've seen it a couple times this year, what they're capable of. But then you wonder, you know, why you have – how do you have a Carolina game where you can't put any points on the board and you struggle? So, again, not ready to say they've turned the corner. Obviously, it was a great performance on Sunday, but I need to see more consistency there.
Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show. Kurt, you're the perfect guy to ask so many questions with your Hall of Fame resume and your QB Confidential YouTube page. But this one, I think, is particular. You're the perfect person to ask about this because it involves passing concepts and a Bible verse. Like, you're an expert on all of these, okay? A.J. Brown tweeting out a Bible verse about patience, essentially, after another minimal target game, to say the least. What are you seeing about this Eagles passing game that is a problem, and what do you think A.J. Brown should do other than just staying patient, Kurt? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one because we understand the formula that Philly has, and that's to run the football. And then when a team wants to take away the run, give you one-on-one on the outside, and A.J. Brown's as good as anybody in the league when he gets one-on-one situations to just go and play pitch and catch out there. And so that's what they do. And so we saw it a couple of weeks ago, against the Rams. They struggled in the first half, but when they were forced to throw it, they could feed A.J. Brown on the outside, and he has a big game. And so that, to me, is a formula that's worked really, really well for them. In that formula, though, when teams aren't doing that and they're not extending an extra guy and they're not leaving A.J. Brown one-on-one, it becomes a lot harder for them to get him the football in those situations. I think the remedy would be to move him around and do some different things with him and find ways to kind of focus on him early in games. But again, the more you move him around, the less you have him out there in those one-on-one situations when you want him. I think a lot of Cincinnati, when Joe Burrow's playing, it's almost like every time they get Ja'Marr Chase one-on-one on the outside, those two guys just connect. They just throw it to him some way, shape, or form. It's just like, nobody's better than him. We will throw it to him every time we get one-on-one. So we want to keep him out there. But then, you get Jake Browning in there, and you're like, okay, we can't play the same way, so let's move him around. But then you don't get that guy on the outside when you want to take those shots. And T. Higgins is a good player. But if you watch Monday night, all their shots down this, down the field were T. Higgins, and they weren't Ja'Marr Chase. And so I think that's the fine balance that you have to play, is that we know where we want him and we know where he's best, but we would love to use him more. So how do we balance this out with moving him around, making him the focal point of a passing game, throwing it a little more early to get him some touches, instead of just going, hey, we're going to leave you out there, and if the defense dictates it, we'll throw it to you. But if they don't, we're not going to throw it to you, and you're going to just have to deal with it. And so that, to me, is the wrestling match, I think, with a lot of teams, but with the Eagles right now. And again, they're 4-0. So the formula continues to work, even though it doesn't look pretty. And that will be, I think, the wrestling match all year long with, what do we want to do? How do we want to do it? AJ's really happy 1 week, and then he's not happy, and he's sending scriptures the next week. And so I just feel like that's going to be what they do, just because that's been the formula that's worked for them.
So it's the first 15 scriptured? Is that what you're saying right now for him? Has he got 14 more? He's got 14 like more to that. Go, or has he got? Or is the passing game going to get better, Kurt?
The question is, those first 15 scriptures, are they talking about patience, or are they talking about aggressiveness and feeding him? I don't know which one it is. We'll have to see each week.
Okay, very good, Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show. And then you alluded to the Ravens earlier, Kurt. Looks like we're going to see Cooper Rush for at least the next 2 weeks. They've got a bye 3 weeks from now. Joe Flacco is out, and Dylan Gabriel is going to be a raw rookie starting in an international setting. Joe Burrow's out until at least December. And Aaron Rodgers chilling on a bye week at 3-1. The Steelers appear to be set up right now. What about what you're seeing, what we saw from them on NFL Network in Dublin moving forward? Kurt, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it on game day, and I didn't think the Steelers were a contender based on what I had seen the first few weeks of the season. Boy, they looked really good, in this game in London. And, it starts with their defense, defense being able to slow down the run, but get turnovers and do the things that they have been doing on the back end that just feeds into their offense. I still feel like their offense has a way to go, that they got the big play to DK, that 80-yard touchdown. But that was actually on a busted coverage by Minnesota. And again, no fault of the Steelers. You take advantage of mistakes that defenses make, of course. But outside of that, it was still a lot of the short dink and dunk type stuff. Now, can they live in that world if their defense is taking the football away and doing the things that they do? Well, yeah, they can. But I still believe that this offense is going to have to take a big jump in either being able to run the football better or developing more of a passing game to really be a threat in the AFC. But right now, I don't want to say by default, because they've earned their wins, but they're sitting in a great spot right now, looking down at teams that are having quarterback issues. And then, of course, the Ravens, who are reeling a little bit and haven't kind of found their footing and figured it out. And as you said, possibly without their quarterback for a couple of weeks. So they've got to be feeling pretty good right now. But if I was the Steelers, I wouldn't be sitting back saying, oh, okay, after the London game, we've got this figured out. They've still got room to grow on offense for sure.
All right. Through your film study, as you always do for NFL Game Day Morning and calling games for Westwood One, and then, of course, QB Confidential, your terrific YouTube channel, which quarterback had the best performance in week four that you saw, Kurt?
I'm going to give you two this week, Rich, and I'm going to give you Dak Prescott from Sunday night.
Okay.
You know, with all the issues they've got around him, he just continues to be that steady force. And what I love about him, and a little bit different than the other guy I'm going to talk about, is he's making big plays down the field. I think besides Matthew Stafford, he's gotten more 20-plus yard chunk throws this year than anybody in the NFL. And that, to me, has been what's been the difference. Struggling defense, run game's okay, but it's been the big plays on the right arm of Dak Prescott. And so, to bring his team back and, I know it's not a win, but to get that tie in that game when nobody expected them to be in it, he gets my nod. And then the second guy is going to be Patrick Mahomes, who had struggled, mightily throughout the first three games of the season, some him, some the guys around him, but really came back into form, four touchdowns. And as I said earlier, they were playing their brand of football, the things that they do, quick throw, and then Patrick making a few of those special throws down the field in this game. And so I thought he looked really, really good this week. And so those are my top two guys from the film study.
Yeah, I mean, and then so you did mention Stafford. I mean, he and Nacua are connecting in such a way. That, honestly, there's some numbers that make it you to Isaac Bruce. I'm serious. There are some Rams numbers that they are threatening from your greatest show on turf, based on how he's come out of the box this year, Nacua.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they broke any of those. I mean, I was fortunate to have a whole bunch of guys. Right. And not that Matthew doesn't have a couple guys. I mean, Devontae's awesome, and Puka's awesome too. So he's got a couple guys to feed as well. But their offense goes through Puka Nacua. I mean, everything that they do, they move them around. You get him one-on-one. I mean, and there's such great confidence with Matthew Stafford and Puka. I mean, the catches that Puka makes on a weekly basis is amazing. I mean, diving catches, going low into coverage and bodies all around him, and his ability to run after catch. I mean, he is awesome. I mean, he is a really, really good player. And what I love too, he reminds me a little bit of an Anquan Boldin, where you watch him play and you don't look at him and like everybody wants to look at these measurable traits. You don't watch him and go, wow, that guy's the biggest or the fastest or the quick. Like, you don't see that. He's just a football player. He just knows how to get open. He understands what Matthew is seeing and how to use his body and how to find the open spots. And because of that, these guys can work so well together, and Matthew can take some chances with Puka that he might not take with somebody else because he's got such great trust in his ability to play the game. And, so when I watch all the film every week, he always jumps off as one of the best football players in the National Football League, regardless of measurable traits. He is so much fun to watch, and the way these guys are working together is really, really special.
Yeah, I mean, Nacua started the game in third place behind Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce for the most catches in the first three NFL seasons of their careers. The entirety, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And he surpassed both Holt and Bruce in the game. And he now has 13 more games to play in his third NFL season.
Kurt. Okay. I mean, you got to let me defend my guys.
No, I'm not criticizing. First, I'm just talking about how great he is.
First and foremost, right? They were on opposite sides, so they had to battle that. Okay. Second thing is, come on now, this is a whole different NFL.
Okay.
I mean, Puka gets five catches a week at the line of scrimmage. We didn't do that back in the day. Our guys were getting the catches down the field. So it is a different NFL. As great as Puka is, and I'm not diminishing how great he is.
Right.
I just don't, it's a different era when you're trying to go stat to stat, catch to catch.
Right.
It was just played completely different when my guys were out there versus where they are now.
Yeah, this is the Rams record book. He needs 98 more catches to tie Justin Jefferson for the most catches in the first three seasons. So, as we all know, Justin Jefferson is a yeah. contemporary. Kurt, thanks for the time. Really greatly appreciate it, as always. We'll see you. I'll see you, I guess, in London.
Yeah, we'll see you this weekend. Fantastic. But I will see you in London. Can't wait to call those games.
That's right. Kurt Warner and I will be calling Jets, Broncos, and Rams. Speaking of Rams and Jaguars in London over the next 3 weeks. Good to see you, Kurt Warner, right here on The Rich Eisen Show. We are back with more and more of your phone calls in hour number two with Roma Dunze. My power rankings still to come.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle motorcycle, RV, and boat insurance. Visit progressive.com. So, Mike, check it out for your boat. And TJ, yes. check it out for your future boat when Arch Manning hits.
Yeah.
And all those cards of his you have going on.
Call me Christopher Cross when it's all said.
Nice. Very good.
You don't want a sailboat.
Listen, we love sound bites. We love when guys... Ladies, give us sound bites. I mean, Nafisa Collier gave us all a sound bite yesterday.
Did she?
But at any rate, certainly in the NFL, and then we make, if you will, bespoke segments out of it. When Belichick was finishing up his tenure in New England, we did the Bill Belichick press conference moment.
Of course.
Jim Harbaugh, we call it the Harbaugh Files, after when he arrived here, he lived like Jim Rockford in an RV by the beach.
Yes.
So we got the Harbaugh Files whenever Jim provides us one. Salty Tua, whenever Tua Tagovailoa goes salty on the media, which is rare, we like it when he goes salty. Well, we've got a new one.
Oh.
And it's off of Baker Mayfield. We've noticed now, you know, he's feeling it now. Enjoy these moments because they're usually like passive aggressive, which normally he's just aggressive.
Right.
But he's just been blowing like these verbal blow darts at people. And so with him taking on Sam Darnold, it's Bucks and Seahawks, big game. Oh. 2-3-1 teams with eyes on their division and eyes on going further. As we know, the two of them once upon a time were there when it all fell apart. Matt Rhule to Steve Wilkes in Carolina. And yada, 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 neither of them are there anymore. So he's asked about that in our first ever edition of Let's Bake.
Fire the cannons.
We don't take any shit. That's about it.
Let's Bake.
Are you guys reminisce about the good old days in Carolina? What are you talking about?
Reminisce about what days?
The good old days in Carolina?
Oh, nope. No, we don't.
Let's Bake.
Outstanding.
No, we don't. That's a great drop.
Debut really edition good. Of Let's Bake.
The what?
Nope, we don't.
Nope.
Caught me in a lie. Anyway, okay. Here we go. No, we don't.
Ooh. No, we don't.
Sam Darnold. Remember, he started. He was in the MVP of the MVP. League. Then he goes down.
MVP for 3 weeks.
Right?
Yeah.
Baker was playing scout team defensive end there.
That picture is just
scout team. It doesn't get any more, you know, one would think wayward in your skull, in your heart, in your gut. Am I doing the right thing? What is happening to me right now?
Yeah.
As it's definitely falling apart organizationally, coaching, it's all falling apart around you. You know, it's a dumpster fire. You know, there are people who are backing up the U-Haul. I learned that phrase from Marshall and Dion and Irv and Warren when we were all working together at NFL Network as a team was falling out of contention. And some guys were already thinking about, I'm not getting hurt. I'm done for the year, even though I've got to play. They would call those games U-Haul games because they were backing up the U-Haul to pack up to get out of town. And I'm sure they were playing U-Haul games in like October. He winds up getting cut, shows up in Los Angeles. And how about this? I hope I have this stat handy. I do not have it right here, but I'll mention it in a second. If you're listening, stay tuned to our YouTube page for all of that. Because Baker, man, he's been through it.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.